Hello and welcome to Beyond Reproach. This is Stephanie Domingo.
This is Tex Lerzel.
This is the show where we talk about whatever we want because there's no format for these minisodes.
There's also no format.
Shut up.
Exactly.
I don't talk good. Oh, man. So I guess you're going to do a continuation of one of your previous scandals.
Back in December, at the beginning of December, I talked about that one time in American history when the American government illegally rounded up 120,000 Japanese Americans and threw them into concentration camps.
Shameful.
In a clear violation of their constitutional rights.
Yes.
No big deal. Yeah, so I mentioned at the end of that story that there were some things that I kind of had left out just for time, because mm-hmm. that was a long story to begin with.
Yeah.
And that I wanted to circle back to it in a mini and revisit it. So if y'all haven't listened to, I think it was episode 26.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you haven't listened to episode 26 yet, go back and do that. If the details are a little foggy because you drank too much champagne on New Year's Eve, go back and listen again. But yeah, that's what I'm just kind of filling in some more detail.
Mm-hmm.
Take a sip of this drink.
Me too.
Basically, there were two important things that I kind of left out of that story. These things sort of shine a bit more light on the why and the how our government did what they did at this period.
I thought you talked about the why.
I mean, I do talk about the why, but there's an additional why that I sort of left out. It just sort of shines some more light on what was going on. So it's easy to assume that after Pearl Harbor was attacked, that the American people were just so scared and so angry that that's really all it took for some, like, good old-fashioned American racism and xenophobia. That was enough.
They're like, oh my God, an occasion to be racist.
Yeah, exactly. Step aside, hold my drink.
You know, if you stay ready for racism, then you don't have to get ready.
Yes. If you stay racist, you ain't got to get racist.
Oh, now I'm sad.
It's an American institution.
Oh.
It seems like that's all it really would take for the government to be like, you know what, we're going to build some concentration camps. But in reality, there was a little bit more to it than that. I mean, don't get me wrong. Don't get it twisted. Racism was 100% at the
root of
it.
Obviously.
But there was sort of a bigger picture. Like, racism has its fingers in all sorts of pies.
Yes.
So fear and anger were not, like, the only
motivating factors.
Exactly. Okay. One other major piece of the puzzle is greed, motivated by racism.
Of course.
Yes. And, like, Jesse did kind of guess at this during the story a little bit, but he didn't quite get to where we took it or where it came from. It was mostly greed from some greedy-ass white farmers in California who were basically just pissed and jealous that Japanese Americans were so good at farming.
Oh, man, that's upsetting.
So they were like, you know what, we're going to harness America's fear and anger and racism, and we're going to use it to take out the competition.
It's like the Cherokee all over again.
Ugh. In 1940, an estimated 45% of Japanese Americans living on the West Coast, or employed on the West Coast, working Japanese Americans, were employed in farming. 45%.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Despite the fact that there were several many barriers up against them so they couldn't buy agricultural land, mm-hmm. or it was very difficult for them to buy agricultural land.
It'd probably be really expensive and it'd be shitty land.
Yeah, exactly. Because we had to protect the poor white farmers from the
This
from
land
the big
is not
mean.
For you. So yeah. It's too good for you.
Despite all that, by 1942, Japanese Americans living on the West Coast were growing about 9% of all truck crops in the entire country. Just Japanese Americans living in, like, California and Arizona. And truck crops are, like, things that are easy to ship, like tomatoes and strawberries, like beans, that kind of thing.
Things that can be put in crates easily.
Yeah, exactly. Not only that, in California alone, 225,000 acres were being cultivated by Japanese tenant farmers in California.
Mm.
And white farmers were not fucking having it. They were not pleased that they had competition. Like, this is oppression. So they decided, you know what? We're going to use the attack on Pearl Harbor as sort of like this bullshit excuse to get the government to take out the competition for us. Just get rid of them. And then it won't be a problem for us anymore.
Yeah.
In 1982, the government commissioned a report on their relocation policy, quote unquote. Mm. I talked about this report a little bit in my full episode on this story, but this report also concluded that resentment from white West Coast farmers was at least part of the motivation for the government to go ahead and put this relocation policy into place in the first place, because they were lobbying so hard. Immediately after Pearl Harbor was attacked, all these farmers were like, hey, get rid of them. Like,
yeah,
but what does Pearl Harbor have to do with your farms? Yeah, exactly. There's a quote from the Washington Post. Someone was interviewed and said, based on an accumulation of evidence, we now know that the government's action was partially initiated by California corporate agribusiness interests, hoping to satisfy their own lust for land while ridding themselves of competition from the state's most productive family farms.
Oh, this is so upsetting.
And it's like family farms, little individual family farms versus corporate agribusiness too. Back at a time when we didn't have like Purdue and Monsanto and all that stuff, this was already happening.
You guys can't hear my head shaking.
You need to put beads in your, in your brains. Yes.
Oh, that would be amazing.
So hours after the attack on Pearl Harbor, within hours, one influential California farmer named Austin Anson sprang into action and got on a plane for Washington, D.C. He got to Washington, basically went after any lawmaker that would listen to him, and was like spinning these fucking lies and tall tales about Japanese American sabotage in the farming industry.
They're like, the most productive, some of the most productive farms.
Like, super productive.
Isn't that good for the country that they have?
Okay. I'm going to get into that. But yes, it was very good for the country that the Japanese, these Japanese families were farming in California. And they were sorely missed when they were gone. So he basically like went after any lawmaker that would listen to him and urged the government to do something to protect these like corporate agribusiness interests from these big, mean family farms.
Trash.
Yeah. And basically his solution to the problem was evacuation. Send them somewhere else.
Oh, wow.
In 1942, he was interviewed by the Saturday Evening Post, and he said, we're charged with wanting to get rid of the Japs for selfish reasons. We might as well be honest. We do. It's a question of whether the white man lives on the Pacific coast or the brown man.
Oh, wow. Well, at least he's telling it like
it
is.
It's crazy to me that this is in the Saturday Evening Post. Because for some reason in my mind, that's like wholesome and like family friendly. And I mean, this guy's just being like straight up openly racist.
That's just what you did.
Oh, it's crazy. He said, they came into this valley to work and they stayed to take over. They undersell the white man in the markets. They work their women and children while the white farmer has to pay wages for help. If all the Japs were removed tomorrow, we'd never miss them in 2 weeks because the white farmers can take over and produce everything the Jap grows. And we do not want them back when the war ends either.
What a piece of shit.
Yeah. And he was obviously not the only person doing this. No. There was like a flood of lobbyists running into Washington representing these West Coast farmers and other industries that were competing against Japanese Americans and nativist groups. Mm-hmm. That were like running to Washington, like, get rid of them. We finally have an excuse to say we need to get rid of them.
We don't like the look of them.
Yeah. So they're pressuring the federal government. And unfortunately, we already know how it went down. We know that they were successful. What I didn't mention before is that Austin Anson was dead wrong when he said that the white man can grow anything that the Jap grows.
Sturdy white man.
Yeah. He was running around claiming that when his competition was rounded up and sent away for no reason, that he would be able to make up the difference and everything would be fine.
No one's going to notice them. No one's going to miss
exactly.
them. We don't want them back.
Instantly, everyone was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
One report was put out at the end of 1942 that said, shortages in many commodities developed and prices skyrocketed to almost unheard of values. This, coupled with increased buying power in practically every district of the U.S., also brought to the growers and shippers most satisfactory prices on almost every commodity shipped from California and Arizona. So this is obviously great news for these white farmers who were either competing against Japanese Americans before or had taken over their farms after they were sent away. But it was very bad news for everyone else, including the federal government, who was now trying to buy produce to can to send overseas to the troops who were at war.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
We had to feed the troops.
Timing.
Yeah.
when keeping it racist goes wrong.
Exactly. And all these little Japanese farms that were super productive actually had contracts in place to produce a certain amount of food for the war effort. And then suddenly they were gone.
Oh, no.
So without Japanese American farmers, there were instant shortages of tomatoes, carrots, peas, beans, and onions that the government needed to feed the troops. And this is actually what led to the idea of the Victory Garden that we like to look back on so fondly. Have you heard of the Victory Garden?
Yeah.
People love to talk about that even today as this like nostalgic.
I knew that, like, it was because of shortages, but I didn't know why.
Yeah, exactly.
I just thought there were a lot of people being shipped overseas.
Exactly. And, yeah, that's what you would think, but because they never tell you the real reason that the government was urging like American households to grow their own produce because Japanese people were no longer around to do it for them. Like, we never would have had to do that in the first place if we had just not been so fucking racist.
Damn.
Today, even people, every time there's like any little crisis, people are like, oh, we should build a Victory Garden.
Yeah, that's great marketing.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's all we learn in school is propaganda and marketing for
this
country.
It's totally like nostalgic and like, oh, isn't it great that we all band together for the war effort? Mm-hmm. Like, that's not what it was at all.
Yeah, I had no clue.
So that's basically like the whole, or not the only reason, but one major reason that Japanese Americans were interred in the first place was just lazy ass white farmers who didn't want to have competition and just asked the government to take the competition out for them.
Wow.
Like, I have to work. Ugh.
I have to work hard and compete with other people who are better than me.
This is terrible.
Come on.
Life is so hard.
Come on.
Well, hello there. Do you wish your high school history course had more drinking, more swearing, and more ladies?
Well, do we have the show for you? Her Story on the Rocks is a long-form podcast talking about good women, bad women, fictional women, and non-fictional women from all times and places. Basically, each week we pair two women who we research with a themed signature cocktail. You won't be sorry you listened to our latest episode.
Available everywhere you listen to podcasts.
Cheers!
So that was one of the major factors in why the relocation policy was put into place. But I also want to talk about how the government went about rounding up Japanese Americans to send them away after they put this policy into place. So do you have any guesses on the methods that the government used to, like,
I know that you said they put them on trains, which
but
I'm
how
like,
they found them, like where they were living.
Oh, I assume they just like asked them to register themselves. And like Japanese people being good citizens just followed the rules.
Yeah, that, I mean, that is a good guess. I'm sure that may have happened in some cases.
Oh, no. Did they have people spy? Neighbors?
They used information from the 1940 census to find them.
That's illegal.
It wasn't at the time.
The, oh, yeah. No.
Many Japanese people have suspected this all along. And for decades, the Census Bureau has been denying that they had any involvement in this whatsoever.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. The Census Bureau was like, no, that's wrong. Like, we would never. But then team of historians recently found evidence that they have been lying all along, that they actually did participate.
Wow.
In 2000 and in 2007, this team of historians found these documents that showed proof that Census Bureau officials had provided information on where people of Japanese ancestry were living, and in some cases even provided other government agencies with individual names and addresses.
They pulled out names and addresses?
In certain cases, not for everyone living on the West Coast. I think there was some like bullshit scandal
fucked up
about somebody saying something about wanting to kill Roosevelt, like a Japanese person had said that. So then people in D.C., they used the census to like find people in D.C. to be like, you can't live here because you're going to try and kill Roosevelt. But it was like one guy made one comment one time.
Yeah.
When these documents were made public in 2000... the director of the U.S. Census Bureau issued a public apology. He said, the historical record is clear that senior Census Bureau staff proactively cooperated with the internment and that census tabulations were directly implicated in the denial of civil rights to citizens of the United States who happened to be also of Japanese ancestry.
That's really scary.
Yeah, exactly. It's fucked. It's scary. It's insane.
Like, are they doing that shit now?
Well, so this was only legal because of the...
Like Wars Act or something?
Second War Powers Act of 1942, yeah. Which suspended confidentiality protections for census data.
Oh,
so
at
the time, this was totally legal.
When did this law go into effect? Did they write this law they could do that?
Okay. Yeah, 1942.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Of course they did.
Mm-hmm.
So diabolical.
It's unbelievable. Like the Census Bureau scary. Can just be like, oh, you know what? Here's all of our records to any... I think the FBI was the one that was really pushing to get this data declassified.
Wow.
Fortunately for immigrants living in the United States today, the Second War Powers Act was repealed after the end of World War II, and confidentiality provisions were reinstated in 1947. And then since then, even more legal protections for personal data have been added and since strengthened, both in the 1950s and the 1970s.
Okay.
Since this happened, or because this happened.
Okay.
So they're like, no, we can't let this happen again, even though it never happened. Because they've been yes. In the 1950s and 70s, we were completely fully saying it didn't happen in the first place. But
wow, that's damn.
So those are just two little extra things that I wanted to talk about because I could have squeezed them into my story, but I wanted to spend a little bit more time with them.
Yeah, no, they're worth talking about on their own because they're just like, whoa,
America.
So wrong what they did on both accounts, like the... The why and the how. The wow. The how, though. That's
it's
really like such a betrayal
of
American citizens. Like you're giving their name and address to remove them from their land. Like,
and that's why communities with heavy immigrant populations are so underrepresented in censuses.
Yeah, because they're afraid.
I don't know if this was the case in your neighborhood, but we just finished taking the 2020 census.
Mm-hmm.
And
people were going door to door.
Yeah, people were in Bushwick. Like there were people standing on fucking street corners.
Yeah.
You were getting people knocking on the door. There were things in the mail all the time.
Too. Yeah.
Because they, and I was seeing things on Instagram all the time from local politicians. I follow a bunch of like little Bushwick city council people and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying like the numbers are making it look like Bushwick is so less populated than it actually is because
immigrant families
aren't turning in their census data.
Yeah.
For good reason.
Because they're afraid.
Yeah. That article that I found that information from was like, don't worry about it. The 2020 census can't be used for this stuff because there's all these extra protections added in at the end. But like, who's to say that we can't just turn around and be like, no, we made a law. It is legal for us to use this now.
Yeah. I mean, all the crazy shit this administration has been doing, like they could have made a law like while we're all focused on Twitter.
Yeah.
The Twitter storm of the day. Like,
exactly.
I get why people are wary.
Hopefully everything goes according to plan and Trump is no longer in power in just a couple days from the time this comes out. And by the time we're back with another full episode, we will officially have a new president.
Wow.
It's very exciting and very scary. And
yeah.
Whoo.
I think we've all just been traumatized by this administration. He's not going to go away.
I don't know what.
I want him to, but I know he just commands attention.
Yeah.
I hope the news media can like quit him. I don't think they can.
Even if he does go away, I have a feeling he might try and leave the country. He's already said that he wants to move to Russia.
He should. Because if he doesn't,
there will
we're
be
coming
somebody,
for that ass.
Yeah, exactly. But there will always be somebody to step in and fill that void.
Yeah.
There's going to be some other crazy politician with a big fucking mouth and no sense.
That's what the people want.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's it for us.
Yeah.
Down the rest of this drink.
Yes.
Cheers, guys.
A new president in 2 days.
Yeah, exactly. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, hopefully he won't have to be pulled out of there.
I would love to see it.
We love to see it.
I want it broadcast on national television.
Oh,
him being
yes.
like dragged out by the feet, kicking and screaming.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be so great.
Oh.
His hair comes unraveled.
That nest on top of his head. Thank you so much for listening to Beyond Reproach, the mini. This has been Tux Lurzel.
Stephanie Domingo.
Signing off. Thank you to Tim Clough, our editor, sound engineer, and podfather. We can't and we shan't without you. All right, guys. Bye.
Bye. Beyond Reproach is proudly recorded in Bushwick, Brooklyn. New episodes are released the first and third Monday of every month. Please note that we are not historians. We are just a couple of drunks who never shut up and love history. Full list of all source information can be found in the show notes on our website. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe. Written reviews are especially important. If you like us, please do one of two things. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or send this episode to a friend, family member, or someone you think would be into it. Don't forget to follow us on social media. Make sure you follow us on Instagram because we post our cocktail recipes the Thursday before each full episode. Please drink along with us if you are not driving. We also have a shop at beyondreproachpod.com. Get your merch, brand yourselves. We are on Patreon if anyone would love to show us some love and throw us some nickels to support the production of our show.